कुंज बिहारे जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहार गोपी जन बोला गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन गिरिवर गोपी जन बोला गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन 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 यशोदा नंदन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे रामा हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे रामा हरे हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे राम राम हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे रामा Rama Rama Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribol, 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 Gaura Haribol, Bol Haribol. Hari Bol, Gora Hari Bol. Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar Bhagwan Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Gaur Premanand.
Hare Krishna. His Grace Shyamananda Prabhu Ki, Jai. Those who don't know, Shyamananda Prabhu is a legendary Kirtaniya. He's been personally trained under the guidance of His Grace Aindra Prabhu. And I always feel like a little fanboy when I see him singing for years, singing his Kirtan. So honored that he's part of this community. And we'll start with a little prayers, some shlokas, and then we'll go into our topic. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We'll be discussing a topic that has been really relevant for me most recently. And I want to talk about the idea of when our heroes fall and why the people we trust let us down and where to turn when they do. But before I go there, I want to start with my heartfelt gratitude to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, for starting many, many programs, one of them being the Sunday Feast program that on a Sunday evening where the rest of the world is already thinking about Monday, thinking about going back to work, that dread of Monday that comes and that seeps in and taking the kids to school and then all the obligations that might be there in life. Srila Prabhupada crafted this program for us where we can kind of forget all of that and really engage in a divine service to Sri Sri Radha Shyama Sundar. And my heartfelt gratitude to the leadership and management of ISKCON Alachua community for crafting such a community where all generations they can all come together and participate in the process of bhakti. It's quite a beautiful thing to see where we see generations and grandmothers and grandparents and their children and their children and hopefully their children all coming to the community. And I'm deeply grateful to my spiritual master for showing the way that in the wake of Srila Prabhupada, on the path that Srila Prabhupada and our great acharyas walked, that there is something to aspire to and to move forward. And I want to start with saying that this class and any of my classes is actually not teaching. There's no teaching. It's all whatever is happening for me in that month, in that time period, is just sharing that. So this month, I've been deeply immersed in the reading of the Mahabharata, the ancient epic. It's been quite a while that I've went through the analysis of each of the characters and what's happening and how does the story turn out. And how is that relevant into the society, into the world that we see today? So the topic is in reference to heroes such as Yudhishthir and Drona and Bhishma, and also relevant in terms of the heroes sometimes that we have in our lives. So I'll start with a little confession that when I was growing up in the 90s in India, there was one musician that I really liked. I'm not going to name him, but he had a white glove. He would do a signature walk, moonwalk, and he would sing songs that the whole world would listen to without even knowing the language. And his name was well known even in the villages of India. You know exactly who I'm talking about. I'm not going to name him. There's recently a movie that came out on his life. And when I was a kid, listening to some of the songs, it gave so much satisfaction and joy to hear that, wow, such a music exists. And that seeing all the wonderful choreography and then lights and sound, there was a part of my childhood that felt joyous when I saw that a movie is coming out recently. I watched the movie, and then I started to dig into that obsession as an adult, to see that why did I like that musician as a child, and what is it? And I wanted to read more about this person's life. And as I read more about this person's life, it kind of started to hit me that there have been documented cases of child abuse and court settlements and all kinds of things that were also happening while this person was extremely famous in the world. And in the backdrop of it, there was, repeatedly settlements and lawsuits that were happening. And I was battling with this idea in my heart that there was a child in me that was saying that, not him. And then an adult in me that was feeling foolish and almost betrayed that I gave my peace of heart to this, that this is the person that I almost looked up to. And it was so hard to shake it off. And so I wanted to ask all of you that how many of you have ever felt like this, that a hero of yours, maybe an artist, an athlete, a leader, a teacher, maybe someone close to in your family has let you down? Can I see a show of hands? Yeah, for the most of the room, yeah. And I want you to remember the person that came up to your mind and also the feeling that came. Because tonight is not about this pop star. It's about that feeling and what our tradition talks about this. I also see His Grace Mahatma Prabhu just walked into the room. So, Mahatma Prabhu, thank you for gracing this community and this presence. I actually borrowed some of the things from Mahatma Prabhu's lectures as I was researching this topic. So it's such an honor to have you here. Thank you. So this idea of a child glorifying a pop star is not... it's not a rare accident, right? We all do it. It's a pattern. There is an athlete god in India. He plays cricket, and people literally call him God. Those who are from India might know who I'm talking about. In Argentina, they've built a church for a footballer. The World Cup is happening right now. Right? There's a visionary, a business person, who just became the world's first trillionaire the other day. And a lot of people are influenced by his thinking and what have you. And then obviously you have political leaders that we kind of see as the heroes that will fix everything, that, oh, this president or this one person will come and we see the rallies and yes, everything will be fixed by this one person. Or it might be someone in our own lives, a parent we idolized, a spouse we trusted completely, or a potential in a child, we see the amount of potential that this child is amazing. And then when disappointments inevitably occur, our trust gets shaken. Something gets shaken in our heart. Do you experience that? Can people relate with this? Yeah. So my thesis statement for this talk is that there is a God-sized hole in our heart. And we are built to love something perfect. But when we don't know where to aim that love, we try to fill that God-sized hole in our heart with human beings. And every time we do that, it leads to some level of disappointment and failure. Because that hole can only be filled by the perfect person. And when we try to seek perfection in people around us, in leaders, in athletes, or in ourselves, that perfection does not exist because it exists in God. Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita that that we are part and parcels, mameva amsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, that we are part and parcels of the Supreme. So the purpose of our lives is to reconnect back with that Supreme perfect person. Now when that doesn't happen, what we do is we try to find perfection in this world. Somehow or the other, we have made a choice to be in this world. And when we come in this world, we try to fill that hole with things that we see in the world. Srimad Bhagavatam talks about that 4:31-14, that as pouring water on the root nourishes the whole tree, similarly, worshipping the root of all of our existence satisfies us completely. But when we don't do that, when we try to fulfill that by other means, dissatisfaction ensues. Now, I was talking about the Mahabharata, that it's this whole chain of thought started by me going, delving into the idea of Mahabharata. How many of you have not heard of the Mahabharata? Anyone in the room? You have not heard of it? No. Who has not heard of it? Okay. Thank you. Yeah, it looks like everyone has heard of it. Yeah, it's the great epic written back by a sage named Vyasadeva, someone who wrote a number of our scriptures. And he talks about the complexity of being a human, the complexity of human existence and how it plays out in the world. And I want to start with one person that I've always considered as a hero, that was always a hero to me. And when I started to read the Mahabharata recently, that narrative of heroism really took a toll. And I'm talking about Maharaj Yudhishthira. So Maharaj Yudhishthira is the eldest of the five Pandavas. They are they have some enmity, or the other party has enmity with their cousins. And it's all about this kingdom, that they were the rightful heirs to it, but somehow through circumstances, that kingdom was not given to them. They were not given what rightfully was theirs. And when it was bestowed, there was a gambling match that happened to take it back from them by the other party. Now, Yudhishthira Maharaj is known as, what's his name? What's another name he's known by? Dharmaraj. What does that mean? What does dharma mean? Religion, dharma, yeah, the codes of conduct, virtue, and Raj means the king of that, means somebody who always upholds. He is the personification of dharma that exists. So Maharaj Yudhishthira is called into an assembly for a gambling match, And if you think of it, if you take it at face value, gambling is considered as one of the vices. We have four vices in our tradition. No gambling, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication. Gambling is up there. So think about it. The personification of virtue is participating in a vice. When dharma himself engages in something that is adharmic, great chaos ensues. And that's what happened on the battlefield and through Mahabharata. And I was thinking about this idea that how does it happen? How could somebody who's so pakka in our ISKCON terminology, who's so strong, who's always following the path of virtue, fall down? And I was relating it that our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada often talked about that as human beings, we have four defects that are there that will always be present with us. What are the four defects? Can anyone name them? Brahma, that means we make mistakes. Just the other day, my wife and I, we came to the temple and I thought that I locked the door. And I was confident about it. When we went back, the door was fully open for 2-3 hours. Luckily, nothing happened. So we make mistakes. We have a tendency to make mistakes, even though we know that I got it and that mistakes happen. We fall into illusion, pramada, or inattention. We miss sometimes what is right in front of us. We zone out. We depend on our own intelligence, which is faulty, or we fall into illusion. Vipralipsa, we have a cheating tendency. We curate our appearance. We polish our resume. We edit our photos before we post them on social media. We come to the temple and we show our best angle, only to hide the rest that is happening inside closed doors, where we are really struggling, and then we try to put an image. So we have a tendency to cheat, and it may happen in bigger terms, or it may happen in little ways. And then finally, karana patava, that means that our senses are imperfect. Our eyes can't see in the dark, you know. We can't even see, we mistake ropes for a snake, things like that. So our senses of our knowing the world are also limited. So why am I bringing this up? Because it kind of holds the idea that as human beings, we have a tendency to make mistakes. So when we expect perfection from other human beings, then there is a possibility of failure. That could happen. That something may not seem right to us. So in the example of Maharaj Yudhishthira coming back, right, he is invited for this gambling match. He's the king of Dharma. And he agrees to a gambling match. And his reason being that I will not oppose what my elders have told me. He takes a vow before the gambling, before. He was told in a prophecy that a great war would happen. And in this great war, the other party would be killed. And it would be about this kingdom, and it would be about this. And he internalized it as that wars happen when there is a difference of opinion. So if I always adhere to the words of my elders, which is the king, Dhritarashtra, the blind king, then how could war take place? Because I'm fully in alignment with them. So he was holding himself true to this value, that this is what's going to happen. So even when he was invited for gambling, he was pursuing a different principle, a lower principle, in terms of bhakti, in a process of bhakti. It's sometimes called as niyama agraha. That means that following agraha means an obligation, niyama. So obligated to follow a principle when it really does not make sense. So he was following a principle which was kind of a lower principle at that point in time. And he is the king of Dharma. And what ends up happening? Because he said, I must honor my elders, I will gamble. And here he is. He starts with gambling about with his weapons and with some coins, and the stakes keep on increasing as the war. And he knows that the gambling match is rigged, because on the other side is Shakuni, who has a pair of die that he casts that were made to only give the number that he's thinking about. So he knew that this is a lost proposition. But because he was holding himself to a principle, he ends up losing everything. He ends up losing his wealth, his weapons, his kingdom. And when everything is lost, he still does not stop gambling. He puts his brothers at stake. He starts with his youngest brother. Then he starts with the other one. Then he starts with Bhima. Then he starts with Arjuna, the great warrior, the hero of the Bhagavad Gita. Then he stakes himself. And even then, he did not stop. He ends up putting his wife, Draupadi, at stake in that gambling match. And as I was reading this, there was so much frustration that started to arise in me, anger, that Yudhishthir Maharaj, you out of everyone, how could you? And think of it, I felt let down and angry by a man who lived 5,000 years ago. This is how sometimes heroes can be. And Mahabharata does not airbrush it. That's why Mahabharata is such a powerful text to see our current world, frame of reference and world, to see that how, because I was expecting perfection from him, and the entire idea being that even the great Dharmaraj can succumb to illusion and mistakes. And great adharma was conducted when Draupadi, his wife, was put at stake, that it resulted in the destruction of the whole other side of family and the king being banished for 13 years into the forest. And in those 13 years, Yudhishthir Maharaj ends up repenting and thinking about how could the gambling match happen. A lot of his reflection in those 13 years are about that gambling match, that how did I act this way, and what is destiny, and what is providence, and what was my role in it. This whole churning with a number of acharyas. And he ends up turning out as a hero because there was also some attachment to nonviolence. He always upheld the value of forgiveness. And it all ended with him actually having to fight in the war when violence was necessary. So that was the story of his transformation. So this person, Yudhishthir Maharaj, who was my hero, who suddenly didn't become my hero, ends up becoming a hero again because of his journey of transformation. And that's the story of the Mahabharata, that we see these characters and we see the transformation or their destruction if they're unwilling to transform. The other example from the Mahabharata in the same thread is the example of Draupadi, right? So one nuance is when Yudhishthir Maharaj was gambling, in his mind, as he's gambling, he's praying to Krishna that, please save me. I hope you intervene in this match so that I don't do this. And yet he continues to gamble. And Krishna obviously did not intervene. And from Yudhishthir's perspective, he was his heroes. Bhishma, Drona, and Dhritarashtra did not do anything. They did not say a single word about the gambling match. So he was let down by his heroes. And Pandavas, the brothers, were let down by their hero, Yudhishthir, because he kept gambling himself away and everything that they owned. In the same hall, when the wife, Draupadi, the most exalted woman of that age, the queen of the world because the great sacrifice took place, she's dragged by her hair in the assembly. She is on her cycle. She is dragged in front of the entire court. Now count the heroes that are present in front. Her five husbands, the mightiest warriors that are present. Quiet, not saying a single word. Bhishma, the great authority of Dharma, not saying a single word. Dronacharya, the greatest warrior, teacher of all the warriors, not a single word. Dhritarashtra, the king on the throne, not a single word. Every protector that she thought that would come to protect her failed in that moment. Draupadi's heroes also failed in that moment. What did Draupadi do in that moment? She looked at everyone that do something. Every single person didn't do anything. Then she depended on herself. She tried to protect herself. Even that failed. And ultimately, Draupadi also reached out to Krishna. Help me, protect me. Proving that the protection that we seek from the authorities of the world, from the people of the world, fails at the end of the day, because ultimate protection comes from the Supreme. So in that moment, when Dushasana is stripping her off with her sari, she prayed from her heart to Krishna, and Krishna appears. And Krishna appears in the form of the cloth, and Dushasana is taking the cloth away, and the cloth keeps on increasing, and he's unable to disrobe Draupadi. Proving the point that ultimate shelter is with Krishna, Rakshishyati iti vishwaso. Hari Bhakti Vilas and Chaitanya Charitamrita quote about that, how there are six principles of surrender, and one of them is recognizing that Krishna is my ultimate shelter. And that's why Krishna is also called as Achyuta, the one who never falls. When all the heroes of the world fall, there's one hero who never falls. So think about now in your own life, how much dependence are we putting on the government will protect me? That this government, or let this party go and the other party come, then things will go my way. Or whether it's somebody in our own family, or whether it's our own wealth, that no matter what happens, this will, or our own intelligence, or ChatGPT, that no matter what happens, I'm going to ask AI. I fall in that category. Dependence on my own intelligence. And the idea being that the example of Draupadi is right in front of us, and contrasted with the example of Yudhishthir, who also prayed to Krishna, and Krishna did not appear because he was engaged in vice and continued to do so and was relinquished his responsibility at that way to Krishna, versus Draupadi, who really called from her heart and Krishna appeared at that point in time. This same thread continues later when Arjuna, who is sitting in the assembly, also goes through something similar. When later on, 13 years pass, the great war happens, and Arjuna is in the battlefield. Our Bhagavad Gita comes at that point in time. And sometimes it's necessary for us to know the context of the Bhagavad Gita, to know. Sometimes we take Bhagavad Gita for granted. I take it for granted that, yeah, I'm aware, you know, these verses. But just to see it in the context of the Mahabharata makes it real that, wow, this was the conflict. These are the nuances. These are the characters that's leading me to this point. And then when I read those verses of what is Arjuna feeling and what is Duryodhana telling Krishna or Duryodhana telling to his gurus, to Drona and to Bhishma, that look who's assembled and look our army, it makes sense. So this same hero Arjuna, who has witnessed his hero falling, Yudhishthira falling, he has seen Draupadi also being kind of becoming a victim to all these heroes who did not do their duty of protecting her. Now Arjuna is in the battlefield and he is standing at the cusp of the war. And he's kind of mentally prepared. Last 13, 15 years have prepared him. It's not that Arjuna was just asked to fight this war. It's not that Krishna showed up on his throne and let's go. There has been a whole amount of preparation that has happened before this war takes place. And yet when Arjuna shows up in the battlefield, he asks Krishna that please take my chariot to see who's assembled. And then when he sees, same thing happens with Arjuna. When he sees his heroes, the way Krishna parks the chariot is right in between Bhishma and Drona. And Arjuna sees them, that my great-grandfather, who loves me to death, and my archery teacher, who has taught me everything. And he breaks down. Because Arjuna's heroes also fall at that point in time. That, how do I fight? How do I kill these men? And Arjuna also relinquishes his duty. Krishna is speaking to him very intelligently up to that point. But the moment Arjuna drops his Gandiva, Krishna goes, you are a fool because you have now left your duty. And Arjuna goes through that same crisis of, who is my hero? What is my shelter? Where do I go? And that whole conversation of Arjuna and Krishna becomes the Bhagavad Gita, which we take now and realize that ultimately Arjuna becomes fully dependent on Krishna, that I am now your servant. Instruct me. And through that instruction, Arjuna also recognizes that, who is my ultimate shelter at the end of the day? So when it has happened for Yudhishthira Maharaj, it has happened for Draupadi, it actually happens for a lot of characters in Mahabharata. Arjuna, the great hero, I'm only choosing these three characters. Then inevitably, it's going to happen for us also. It's going to happen for us. If we think that even in spiritual communities, I have my heroes, it may happen within a spiritual community also. Because human flaws are inevitable. It's going to happen to these human bodies. That's why we take shelter in Krishna and the pure message that's been received through that parampara, through our teachers. That ultimate shelter belongs with Krishna, no one else. So how long will I keep thinking that I will protect myself, I will save myself, my family will save me when moments of crisis hit in our lives? How long will I continue to pretend that I'm well protected, you know? My bhakti, my Krishna consciousness, my processes, I just do it because of cultural reasons. I've been initiated for many years. I practice. How would that urgency ever come in life if we don't find that this is the ultimate shelter? There's no other shelter. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to the story of Gajendra, when Gajendra is caught, Gajendra the great elephant, is caught in a lake by an alligator. Or was it a crocodile? Yeah, I'll go with alligator. Gajendra is caught. And Gajendra first uses his own strength to get out. Then he looks at his wives, he had many wives. Get me out of this situation. Then he looks at his friends. Get me out. Then he looks at his servants. Then he looks at his children. Nobody could get him out. Nobody could get him out. And then he calls out to Krishna. And we all do that. It's such a human tendency. And Gajendra was an elephant, but we see the same tendency of trying, exhausting all other ways of finding shelter. And when nothing comes through, we inevitably go to Krishna. And Prabhupada would sometimes say that, surrender immediately. Why do you want this variety of experiences when you know this is the ultimate shelter? And Prabhupada writes in that purport that the people who think, I think 8:3:13, I forgot the verse, but I can provide it after the class, that why do people are fools if they think that all these other circumstances will make them happy? He gives the example of America. He says that in America, I see that if you have a nice house and a nice car, people think they are safe. I got my nice house, I got my nice car, I'm safe. And Prabhupada then writes that most deaths happen through car accidents. So where is that real shelter? And when will I realize in my own life that this is the real shelter that I intellectually understand, but I really don't fully take shelter of it. I really don't make it serious. So what is real heroism when we think of it? What is the real heroism of Yudhishthir, of Dronacharya, not Drona, of Draupadi, of Bhishma, of Arjuna? The real heroism is that they all surrendered to Krishna at the end of the day. That's what makes them heroes. And the people on the other side who did not, they ended up anyway surrendering to Krishna in the form of death, without choice. But these people surrendered with choice, and that choice of surrendering to Krishna actually makes them hero, makes them the people that we see. So if in our lives, if it happens that someone well-trusted that we trust has fallen and it still hurts, what do we do? What do we do in that moment? We see through the lives of these heroes that we notice this grief that's there. Draupadi wept. When this happened, Draupadi wept. And she continues to express her disappointment even after the gambling match happened. She continues to bring it up to Yudhishthir Maharaj that, Maharaj, I still don't understand how you could gamble. How did you let it happen? She sits with that pain. She sits with the pain of disappointment. And same thing happens with Arjuna. When Arjuna was forced when Arjuna was feeling forced almost to fight, he expresses his pain and disappointment to Krishna. He says that my bow is falling. He talks about his three levels of intelligence. He talks about what's happening in his body. He says, my hands are shivering. I have perspiration all over me. Then he talks about what's happening in his mind. My mind is reeling. I have all these scenarios of doom that's going to happen. And he talks about what's happening in his heart, that there is going to be failure. So what awareness are we bringing in our lives where we can be in attunement of what is my body saying? What is my heart saying? What is my mind saying? It's to notice that grief rather than bypassing it spiritually, that we are not this body, Prabhu. That's what happens. No, it hurts. It pains. I'm frustrated. I'm angry that this is happening, that this happened. How many of us allow ourselves to feel our feelings and feel those emotions like Arjuna did, like Draupadi did? It is described that her eyes were so red with anger when she saw Dushasan doing this. She felt her frustration. So that's number one. We notice. We feel our feelings. We understand when something like this happens in our lives. Then we use a philosophical lens to also understand that the perfection is never in these people that I sometimes seek. The perfection belongs to Krishna. That's why he's the supreme perfect person. We are not. So acknowledging that even the heroes might have a falling, might make a mistake, might happen. It's inevitable. Prabhupada also used to say in many letters he would write that to err is human, but most important is to learn from that mistake. Are you learning from that mistake? Then we bring that pain and frustration into our process of surrender, that Krishna, help me. Then that intensity of that prayer into our process of bhakti, into the process of our chanting, into our process of bhakti, that my Lord, I am disappointed and disgruntled with the way this world works. Just like Draupadi did. Krishna, save me, like Arjuna did. That I can't fight, help me. So the goal is to not fill that God-sized hole in our hearts with other human beings, with politicians, with political ideologies, with artificial intelligence, with rich people guaranteeing a place on Mars, whoever that is. But reserving that hole to be filled by the person who is actually most deserving to fill that hole. I started this sharing by talking about a childhood hero that I felt real disappointment because as a child I got into this idea of, wow, this is an amazing person. Only as an adult to realize that there was nothing. It was just smoke and mirror outside, but in the background was no substance. And some of you are also might be carrying disappointments far heavier than mine in a leader, in a teacher, in a family member, in a society, in the society, that might have remained for years. And some of you might experience some of these disappointments come up later in life as we progress. Inevitably, human nature means making mistakes. At that moment, we remember, at this moment, we sit with it and recognizing that our ultimate shelter is with you, Krishna. And I turn to you, Radhishyam, and I pray to you that anytime this happens, may my mind always remember, may my heart always remember that you are the ultimate shelter. And it's all happening ultimately because there's a lesson for me that I am not willing to learn, a lesson I need to learn, or a lesson that this is how the world is and I just need to continue with my process of praying and asking for it. So no direction in this world is safe except the direction that points towards the lotus feet of Lord Achyuta. That's the one hero who never falls, has never fallen, and will not fall. So today, we take our shelter and we understand that who is the rightful hero and we depend on that hero and put that hero in our hearts. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there are any questions, comments, corrections, please. Yes.
Thank you for the great class. So in the term of the Mahabharata and Yudhisthira, my question is, what is destiny and what is free will? Because, you know, Mother Bhumi, even way before Yudhisthira was even born, was already crying to Vishnu, to Krishna, please relieve me of all these great armies and all this burden on this earth. All the demigods already had arranged to take birth. Krishna had already planned all of this to happen. And if there is to be a big war that destroys all the big armies to relieve the burden on the earth, and Krishna has to arrange it, what other way than to make Dharma do an adharmic thing? That is his pastime. That is his plan. So did Yudhisthira have free will? Was it just Krishna's destiny? Was it Krishna's arrangement? I wish I had $1 million right now to go gamble in Las Vegas, but it's not my destiny. It's not, no matter how much free will I can have to do something bad, it also has Krishna's in control of how much bad I can do too. Because, you know, my desire to do bad is unlimited, but Krishna still has my destiny that you can only do so much. He controls everything. So is there free will? Krishna said he was not going to fight in the battle. He made a promise. God made a promise. Whatever God speaks is law. And he said he was not going to fight. And he broke a promise to show that some promises are made to be broken. So is there free will in these things, or is it all just in charge of Krishna?
Thank you for your question. When you go home today, would you drive your car to go home, or would you just reach home suddenly? You
know, sometimes I drive and I'm so lost in my mind, I don't know how I got home. It's almost like autopilot. You know, it really, I don't know if that's only me or somebody else happens, or you're talking on the phone, and you're like, how did I get here? How did I drove here? God bless the super soul.
Yes, it may seem autopilot to you, but you still went in the car, turned on the ignition, and you made your way back to your home, right? So So this is a question that's always asked in a tradition, and this question will always continue to come, because if everything is destined, because the idea of understanding God sometimes is really hard for us, because we see a world of cause and effect. We live in a world of cause and effect. So sometimes seeing this idea that there is someone who's cause of all causes, who's beyond any cause, how does that function? How does that work? So the answer is both. The answer is both. The answer is that there is free will. There's obviously a free will. Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that, Arjuna, I have given this knowledge to you. Now yathechasi tatha kuru. Now you do as you wish to do, because you still have your choice. And all these people have already been killed because they are adharmic people, and dharma will win. That is for sure. But it may not happen through you, it may happen through you. That is your choice to make. So the example being that, I don't know who shared this example, might have been an article by His Holiness Suhotra Swami back in the day that I read, that he gives the example of a stage, of a play, that a play is written a certain way. We know it's going to happen a certain way. And then there are these actors who are playing certain characters. However, they can choose to play the character a certain way. That's their choice. But how the play ends is already pre-decided. But within that play, there is still choice in terms of how they do a certain character, or if they refuse to do a character, and then what happens. And there is a director of the play. So sometimes we see the example that, but it was Krishna's pastime, that all these are devotees, so it was meant to happen. Jai Vijay came, Kamsa did, and so, or Shishupal did, and so what's the big deal? No, the big deal is, what is my lesson in that experience? The big deal is that, how am I going to apply in my life and in my choices that are actually deciding my karma and my future and my destiny? So it's both, that there is a destiny, and within that destiny we have choices that are available to us. And if I don't make the right choice, it's quite simple as jumping from a building. That if I jump from a building, and once I've jumped, then I say, Krishna, I didn't mean to jump. No, the law of gravity will take care of you, because I've made a choice. It's not that my choice suddenly overpowers the law of gravity. I have made my choice in that capacity. So there is karmic law in place, and also there is divine intervention that also comes into play into the picture. So we have to acknowledge both and understand and proceed.
Hope thank you helps. So much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank
you. Yes.
I was just thinking that when Srila Prabhupada was really ill at the very end, he gave us a prayer and said, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please cure Srila Prabhupada. So he didn't say, you know, that was definitely going to happen, but if it's your desire, so.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, Krishna's will ultimately can change things. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful class. You spoke about Yudhisthira's attitude of forgiveness. So since your main thrust was we are sometimes disappointed by our heroes, what role should forgiveness play in our hearts?
As in general, as in broadly, what role does forgiveness play?
Well, particularly, you know, when it's not a movie star or a pop star, but a spiritual guide, for example.
Yeah, yeah. The difference is Yudhishthir Maharaj was the king of the world and a kshatriya and a warrior. So his responsibility was to fight and stand up for injustice when he sees it. And when he succumbed to a lower principle of forgiveness or tolerance, or my elders have not spoken, great injustice happened. Same thing with Bhishma at that point, where Bhishma did not intervene, and later he reveals that it was because of a technicality of the law, that I didn't know that should Draupadi be gambled? Because Yudhishthir is already lost. So did he have the power to lose Draupadi? He did not know the answer to that question, so he kept quiet. Again, the idea of Niyamagraha versus what is the highest principle. So the idea of forgiveness is excellent, it's exalted, it's there in our tradition and we understand it. But also there is the idea of duty at that point in time. And then later on we see Draupadi, who herself is, when her own children are killed, and Ashwatthama comes, and what did Draupadi do? The same lady who was demanding justice, what did she do? She forgave Ashwatthama. So we understand the idea of forgiveness, but the idea is that we don't apply these principles as a blanket, and that's what Mahabharata teaches us. That there are nuances in circumstances and situations. And Krishna tells Arjuna that Bhima and I want you to punish Ashwatthama and kill him. And your wife Draupadi does not want you to kill him. Now you decide, Arjuna, again, choice, free will, that now you decide what do you want to do. And Arjuna could go either way, that I'm going to slay Ashwatthama or I'm going to forgive. Versus he found a middle ground that satisfied everyone in the assembly in that time. So we keep the idea of, if in a spiritual society, if something happens, yes, there is a principle of forgiveness and there is a principle of bringing accountability to people for their actions also. Not putting a blanket of forgiveness when we know that this can cause more harm down the stream, or this person could be a harm to other situations or societies. It's for their own good that I take that stand, or I take it to the right authority, to the right people who can take that stand. So that's why principle of virtue and vice, it's so nuanced and circumstantial that no principle can give an answer that satisfies us in that
Thank
way.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ramananda Prabhu has a question in the back.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Prabhu. You mentioned a number of things. One is that Krishna is perfect. The second is that we are flawed and that we have four primary flaws. Which
the human being. The human yeah. body is flawed, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which then means that since this world is, but we believe in intelligent design, that Krishna deliberately made us to be flawed. Now, what I'd like to explore is, you gave one reason why that might be so, and that is that we would take shelter of him. Are there any other reasons that this design was made in such a way that we are so imperfect, we make so many mistakes, do so many foolish things, even disobey him, or you know, some people turn away, hate him, so many things. So much freedom was given to us, and what was the deepest intention that we can explore with that?
Krishna made this as a flawed world so we can remember that this is not our home. That this is a replica. This is created. This is given to us so that we can feel the idea of being an enjoyer and realizing that, wow, that's not it. So it's intelligently flawed by design. It's intelligently flawed so that we learn our lesson. Otherwise, if this is complete and perfection is there in this world, then I will have no reason. However, great acharyas find this world also perfect and complete because they are always engaged in the process of bhakti. And they are doing the perfect thing even in this world. So they may have no challenges with this world. And they can go because their vision is set on the right course. But until and unless our vision is set on that right course of action, where it does not matter what goes on in the world, because I am fully committed to the process of my parampara and my tradition and connecting with Krishna, then this world will continue to remind us that this is flawed. This is flawed. Stop putting all your vegan eggs in one basket because it's flawed. Hope that helps. Thank you. Any final questions? Pran Govinda, oh, Yadavar Prabhu, please.
I've said this before, I think, but I'll say it again. In our Hare Krishna movie, there's two final sentences that Prabhupada speaks on his bed in the last few seconds of the movie. And those two sentences are very profound. If we we actually realize it, there's no reason to hanker or lament. And they are, everything is acting, moving by the supreme desire of Krishna. This consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. It's like the final word that Yadivar Prabhu spoke. Thank you. One more question?
Thank you. Nice class. I just want to add something. If, even if someone really depend on Krishna and understood that Krishna is everything, he will have a doubt in life. There's a famous verse quoted by Prabhupada and many acharyas. Siddhir bhavati ba neiti sangshaya achyuta seivinam. Nishangshayastu tad bhakta paricharja ratatmanam. So how it is translated to my Alachua devotee's case, if we follow Prabhupada's instructions strictly and try to please Prabhupada, that will please Krishna, and there is more guarantee than directly depend on Krishna.
Thank you.
Because otherwise doubt will come.
Because the spiritual master is more merciful than Krishna. Thank you for that principle, Prabhu. Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll go into prasadam and followed by aarti. Hare Krishna.